welcome to the show, and thanks for taking the time to check out my little program here. Today we're going to try something a little new. I had a couple indie bands that I wanted to highlight, and I thought, why not combine these two interviews into one episode? I just thought maybe these guys can kind of help each other out. So you might be listening because you're a fan of the Ivans, or you may be tuning in because you're a fan of the Issue. But now you've heard of a new band, and so hopefully you'll dig their stuff, unless, of course, you already knew about both bands, in which case you're an indie music savant, and you should probably have your own show. If you've never heard of either of these bands, then hopefully you'll dig the music of at least one of them. And so up first, we got Clay Dieters of the band The Issue, and they have a new single out that just came out. It's called What You Need, and I believe that actually drops today on Spotify, March 1st, the day of this airing. It's a great hard rockin' song, and you can also check out the rest of their music on Spotify. They got a few other songs that are really good. And then in the second half of the episode, I talked to Jim and Jack Ivans of the band The Ivans, and I hear their journey. It's a lot of fun. And they have a new single that's coming out called Don't. It's not out yet, but it should be out soon. And they also have a catalog on Spotify you can check out. They have a really great website as well. Both of these interviews were a lot of fun, and I enjoy chatting with these guys, so I just hope you dig it too. Thanks. Welcome, Clay Dieters, to the Chuck Shute Podcast. How you doing, Clay?
How's it going, Chuck?
Great.
Good to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too. This is in sort of real life. I mean, it's more real than like the Facebook messages.
Yeah, it's better than texting over Facebook, that's for sure.
Yeah. I can hear you. I didn't know what your voice sounded. I mean, I heard you sing, but I've never heard you talk. Sure. I was telling my girlfriend, I was like, for all I know, he could have like a stutter. Like, I have no idea. You have an accent though. That's kind of nice.
Little bit of a northern accent. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me about that. Glenwood, Minnesota, 2 hours away from Minneapolis, which is kind of the big city. You guys were, I think I saw negative 17 degrees last night.
17 below. I think we've hit 40 below some evening in the past few nights.
That is insane. What does that feel like? I don't even know if I've ever felt that kind of cold.
Well, thankfully it was kind of a gradual drop in temperature, so your body somewhat adjusts to it. But when you first walk outside in the morning, it'll catch you off guard.
Okay. So yeah. So tell me,
go outside in a t-shirt. That's for sure.
No, that sounds like hell. Tell me a little bit more about this, town. The only thing I know, you guys have a claim to fame. I don't even know if you know this, but you have a female golfer. Apparently she's won like 5 of the ladies PGA tours. Cindy Rarick, is that her name? Have you heard of her?
I honestly have not.
Oh, that's like your claim to fame for your town, I thought.
So yeah, Glenwood. I actually grew up and went to high school in a town called Sauk Center, Minnesota, which is about 30 miles east of Glenwood.
Oh.
And I actually just this fall in September bought a house in Glenwood. And that's why I'm in Glenwood now. But I was living in Minneapolis, actually, the 3-4 years prior to moving back up to central Minnesota. And actually, I'm sitting in Minneapolis right now. We at Essential Session Studios.
Oh, are you doing some recording right now?
I'm actually going to be doing some guitar work.
Okay.
For a guy this afternoon. So this has kind of been our home base since the band really started.
Okay.
The guy that owns the studio is a great dude and been super supportive of the band. So
that's great.
Made his studio our home.
So you just like stay there, because if you're 2 hours away, it's not like you can commute to the studio. So.
Yeah. So it kind of depends on, what we have going on. You know, I usually come down once a week, from Glenwood, knock whatever out that we need to do. Obviously, with now, you know, today's technology, we can do a lot of recording and demoing in separate places.
That's nice.
So, you know, a lot of our songwriting stuff is usually an idea thrown around at home and then get together and jam and work it out. But yeah, you know, like this morning, I just drove down here this morning, 2-hour drive, you know, grab some coffee and throw on the Chuck Shute Podcast.
Nice. That's awesome. So how's that drive though in the snow? Is it, I'm assuming they plow the roads and everything and salt it or do what they got to do and you can still drive?
Oh yeah. They plow, you know, if it's a heavy snowstorm, you'll be and you're going down the interstate, you'll get behind like four or five snow plows that are next to each other, just getting rid of all the snow and a lot of salt. You know, my car is an absolute mess right now.
Yeah, I think so you guys just get used to it there. See, because I grew up in Washington State and it doesn't snow there very often. But when it
Sure.
does, they're like, oh my God, cancel school. There's like a drop of snow. I mean, they are really like, and I remember being at like 2 hours late. That was their biggest thing. If there was like a little bit of ice on the roads, they're like, oh, 2 hours late for school,
Hours
which
late.
it was great growing up when that would happen. Because like, yes, I get to sleep in 2 more hours. But
Yeah, that's nice.
yeah, they
No,
don't.
for us, you got to have like a foot of snow and it has to be like 50 below wind chill for us to get out of school.
Yeah, so that's intense. So you growing up there, you were kind of like a jock, right? You played football, hockey, and wakeboarding. Did I see? Were you like a hockey prospect? Were you being like scouted and stuff? I saw your name on like this like hockey prospects website or something.
Yeah, so there's a lot of like juniors teams around Minnesota. So you have like your U18 high and high school hockey is massive in Minnesota.
Oh,
It's
I'm
like
sure, yeah.
it's the you know it's compared to like football down in the southern states in
Sure.
like Texas and Alabama. So yeah, there's a lot of hockey teams. You know, college hockey is big, but like you know, juniors teams are kind of like the minor league team for like
Okay.
D1 colleges and stuff like that. So if you make one of those, you kind of then get scouted by D1 schools and then work your way up the ladder there. I wasn't getting scouted by any D1 schools or anything. I had a couple D3 colleges that looked into me and some juniors teams. And like hockey was my life from the time I was 4 years old until I was about 16. And all I did was play hockey year round. But once I kind of turned 16, music started gradually creeping up more and more into my main line of focus. And when I was in high school, I took hockey very seriously. And I'm an extreme like competitor. I love hockey for that sense. It's a super competitive sport, high action. So I just fit right in that scheme.
Were you a goalie? Is that what I?
I was a goalie.
Okay. Do you get to wear the cool mask? I feel like goalies
Oh
always get the
yeah.
coolest masks.
Yep, cool mask. I had it all painted up nice from a designer.
Nice. Did you get into
It's a
fights?
cool. I never got any in any
Really?
fights. No,
Never in
not
a fight.
personally.
I thought that was
Nope.
like standard procedure.
Yeah, you know, in high school you can't get away with fights. I
Oh.
mean, once they start, like the refs jump in pretty quick. It's once you get into like juniors and college and stuff when
Oh,
fights
okay.
start happening, and even then, you know, refs jump in pretty quick. But
Yeah, we didn't have hockey in Washington. I mean, we had a minor league team in Washington State, but
sure.
the Thunderbirds, but yeah, so I wasn't really familiar with that. So when I moved down here to Arizona, surprisingly, they have a hockey team. So I went to a few games and it was fun. But yeah, there was like fights and I was like, "Whoa, this is weird. There's actually a fight and the refs kind of let it happen for a lot of the time."
Yeah, it's a big part of the game, you know, it's an entertainment aspect, you know,
For
for the
sure.
NHL. That's what draws people in is the fights. But yeah, you know, there's generally obviously there's a lot of heat being thrown around during a competitive game, but generally, you know, the fights are between players are fairly respectful. I mean, they go at it pretty hard with each other, and then, you know, once the fight's over, they give each other a slap on the back and go to
Oh my God. That is such a
the
manly sport. I'm way too
penalty
much of a pussy to play that
box.
sport. I think, you know, the guy takes off his gloves, I'd be running for the other or skating to
It
the other side and get the hell out of there. So yeah, so then
is.
anyway, so then you get into music. So did you take lessons? Did you just figure it out on your own or and you were singing and guitar at this point or just guitar?
Yeah, so I started playing guitar kind of around like, I mean, I first picked up a guitar when I was probably around 12. I had older brothers that played in bands and stuff, cover bands in our area, because that's really all you can do in small town central Minnesota. So yeah, I mean, one of my brothers just taught me a couple chords when I was like 12, and I kind of plucked around a little bit, didn't really take it that seriously. But my mom had made all us siblings take piano lessons when we were younger. So like I had music, and I knew like how to read sheet music, and I knew like how music worked. But I didn't really start getting into it till I was, 16, you know, when rock music really kind of took over my life.
Yeah. So what bands were, I saw that you're a Slash fan, which that's awesome. Are you now the, one of the songs that you guys do, I think, is it the Open Your Eyes? It reminded me of a band, and I was like, I was trying to figure it out last night. I finally figured it out. Pierce the Veil. Do you remember that band? Are you a fan of that band? Cause that's what it reminded me of.
I can say you're probably the first person that's ever made that comparison, but yeah, it's got a very modern, like mid 2000s.
Yes.
Kind of rock metal, post metal thing going on. That guitar work. Yeah. It's a cool riff.
And the screams, I think, I feel like the screams are part of that kind of that kind of slow and then, you know, aggressive and screamo. Is that the right term? I don't know. I'm terrible with the genres, but I just know it reminded me of that band a little bit. Are you a fan of them?
I am a fan of them. Okay. I honestly, I don't listen to them all that much. I listen to their bigger stuff, and I saw them, I don't remember if it was like Warped Tour or something. Maybe they were on back in the day that I saw them. For me, as far as like screaming goes, I was bigger into Avenged Sevenfold.
Okay.
More of the mainstream stuff. I listened to a lot of Seether when I was in, like 9th, 10th, 11th grade, Sean Morgan. He kind of goes in and out of, you know, a regular singing voice into like this big, big scream. And, you know, and I would learn a few cover tunes here and there for open mics. When I was in high school, I would do a couple of Seether tunes, and I just found that register, being able to go back and forth between a somewhat growly scream into a regular singing voice for whatever reason seemed to work.
Yeah. So you're doing the open mics. Is it just you with an acoustic guitar then, or did you have a band at this point?
No, it was just me with an acoustic.
That's kind of scary, isn't it? Well, I guess not, because you play hockey, so you're not scared of anything.
Well, yeah, I mean, I as a goalie, you get put in, you know, the game is kind of on your shoulders, you know. So
that's true. Yeah,
on you. And you know, really, I attribute a lot of that to being a front man and the lead singer as well. You know, eyes are kind of on you. There's a lot of pressure. You know, if you fuck up, everybody knows.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same type of deal. So, you know, I wasn't really ever nervous for stuff like that. And my older brother was the host of the open mic night. Mm-hmm. So like he would play for a couple hours and I'd go and jam a couple songs with him.
Well, and plus no one's going to boo you. If you're like a tough hockey goalie, no one's going to be like, you suck. You'd be like, I'm sorry, what'd you say, motherfucker? And it's like kicking their ass, right?
Well, I'm not a very big guy, so I don't know that
you're
I'm
not
kicking anybody's ass.
You seem like you're tall. Are you not tall?
Yeah, I would guess I'm fairly tall. I'm 6'1".
That's tall. That's above average for sure.
6'1", but in high school, I was maybe a whopping 160 pounds soaking wet. So tall and skinny.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That was like me. I was, except not the height. I just was skinny. So that's not as exciting. So then, so when do you form your band that you're in now, The Issue? How'd you guys like come up with the name and how'd you find all the members and all that?
Yeah. So, Avery, the original guitar player, and then our bass player, Kyle, we all went to high school together, and Kyle, the bass player, me and him actually grew up playing hockey together. So we had been friends since we were like 4 years old when we both started playing hockey. And, so, you know, the two of us were always pretty good friends, but Kyle was actually he was always into music, but he was never actually really a musician. He was in choir and stuff in high school. And he kind of played guitar here and there, but he never took it seriously. And anyways, me and Avery, we had jammed a few times and, just decided like, hey, let's start a band. And we're like, well, who the hell are we going to get to play bass? And I was like, well, Kyle's, you know, into music. Let's see if he wants to try, you know, learning. Huh. So yeah, he learned, you know, he learned a couple tunes on bass and he jumped in head first, man. Now he's a very proficient, bass player and, you know, he's all in. So it's kind of cool, you know, seeing him be somebody that has never really played guitar, never played bass, go from that to this really, you know, awesome bass player.
Well, that's great. Yeah. So then how'd you guys come up with the name? Because I did notice that, like, if you type in the name on Spotify, there's a few other bands. There's a couple that are The Issue, just like you. And then there's some that are like Issues. And then there's like, I think there's a podcast without The Issue. And so there's other stuff. Do you ever worry about that or try to like sue these other people with the same name?
Yeah. Yeah. We've had that conversation. When we looked, you know, when we kind of decided on the band name, we looked, you know, the first thing you do is go on Facebook and type in The Issue Band. And there really wasn't anything on Facebook. So we were like, okay, well, let's roll with this. And we knew of Issues. Issues is a pretty big rock band. But they're a little bit different. And we just, you know, when we were starting the band, we were starting out, you know, doing cover tunes and really didn't know what this thing was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
We were, you know, 16, 17, 18, just kind of messing around, writing songs and having fun. So like, you know, the past couple of years when we started putting actually taking the original band route and putting music out is when we found out about like these other, The Issues on Spotify. But from my understanding, they're old bands that haven't put music out in, I don't know, 5-10 years. I don't even know if they're still bands at all or not. So we have The Issue verified artist page. So.
Okay. Nice. Very cool.
We're the real one.
Yeah. So you said that you did covers. Obviously you're doing original material now. So if you guys do a live show, is it a mix of like half and half, or is it mostly original or mostly covers, or how does that work?
So now it's mostly original. We'll play a couple covers here and there just because we have such a wide range of cover tunes that we can play at any given moment.
Like what are some of the covers you play?
So there's a band called Porcupine Tree, a song called Shallow. It's not a very popular song, but it fits really well into our set list. So we play that. And we're all big fans of Alice in Chains. Nice. So we play like Man in the Box.
Okay. I like that song.
Stuff like that. We did a Soundgarden tune. You know, usually for our original shows, we try to find cover tunes that are fit well with our original set.
Right.
You know, the same type of deal. But, you know, we've pulled out like Judas Priest or Black Sabbath and done, you know, Paranoid.
Okay. Like that and because you do have is this like kind of like a side project, the Out of Line? That's a full on cover band, right?
Yeah. So that's actually a band with my one of my older brothers that had a cover band for a while, and they played a lot around like Minnesota and the Dakotas and stuff. Mm. Doing like street dances during the summer.
Okay.
In Minnesota are like a really big thing.
Street dances.
So like a smaller town blocks off, like the main block, city block in town gets blocked off, and they have like their town festival and they have a parade and they have what they call a street dance where they hire a band in and they have outside bars and stuff set up with food and a few thousand people just come and pack in this little street. And
I've never heard it called that, but yeah, I've seen those. Like we call them here, they call them a block party where they just block off some of the, sounds like the same kind of thing. I never heard it called a street dance.
Yeah. It's the same thing, but the Minnesota lingo is a street dance.
Oh,
that's kind of where, you know, a lot of us cut our chops as musicians early on is being in cover bands and playing stuff like that, because every small town in Minnesota has a street dance.
So are those the biggest shows that you do, are these street dances, or what's the biggest show that you guys have done?
The biggest show that we've played, Actually, honestly, probably is the hometown. So Sauk Center is where the band, I guess, technically originated, our hometown where we went to high school. And a couple of years ago, we played the street dance and we split it with my older brother's band. So we did The Issue, did a full original set and then did a cover set too. So we actually played two sets.
Nice.
But I was told there was over 4,000 people packed in the street.
That's pretty big. Yeah, that's good.
So, that's probably our biggest show.
Okay. What about a small show? Have you ever done the show where like nobody shows up to it? Or,
oh yeah.
Really?
Oh yeah. We've played a good handful of shows to 10 people.
Oh, a handful like that. Really? Yeah. But that's just kind of like starting out. That's just how it goes sometimes. Right. Are these on like, is it typically like on a Tuesday or something? Cause sometimes bands get screwed with nobody's going out to shows on a Tuesday.
Yeah, you know, for like an original gig, a lot of like, especially in the Minneapolis area, like for us, when we first moved down here and we're trying to get a name around town, you know, venues wouldn't book you on a Friday or Saturday night.
Right.
You had to play on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, or I mean, Sunday, Monday, we've played pretty much every night of the week down here just to get a show. So, yeah, I mean, you get your regulars that show up to the bar, whether there's a band playing or not.
Right.
And that's kind of who you play for. And then
can you get your friends to come out, or family members or girlfriends, or.
Yeah. You get friends and family to come out. So you'll play for, you know, 50 people here and then 100 people. And you kind of start finding the other bands in town that you gel with, for shows. And, you know, we play with some bands where our fans cross over really well. So, you know, we try to put lineups with those guys together as much as possible.
Yeah. Is it hard to find other bands in such a small market? I mean, I don't know how many, you know, or do you go to Minneapolis? Cause that's like that's only 2 hours away. Is that where a lot of your shows that you'll do will be, or?
Yeah. So now most like, The Issue, I mean, we're pretty much, our home base is out of Minneapolis. So I live up in Glenwood now. But the other two guys, or the other three guys, they live down here, and live and play, you know, down in the Minneapolis area. So I'm just kind of the lone ranger up in no man's land.
Okay.
But you know, so yeah, you know, when we book original sets, it's, you know, in Minneapolis, and then we branch out into like North Dakota and Wisconsin. And
is that the farthest you've gone, is like North Dakota?
Nebraska is the farthest we've traveled.
Okay.
Omaha, Lincoln.
And are those just shows that you book for yourselves, or you try to team up with another band and do like a small short tour, or?
Yeah. So the one, so what we actually did for the Nebraska show is we played a street dance, another block party out there.
I love that term, street dance.
I know, like I'm having a hard time breaking the habit of saying.
No, I love it. Keep it going.
It's just what I grew up.
I love the lingo up there. Like I love that movie Fargo too. I love the way the accents and everything. It's great.
Yeah, for sure. But you know, when we first started, so like, it was easier for us to get shows as a cover band because it was more marketable. So what we would try to do is we'd book a Saturday night cover show and then book like a Friday night original gig on the way to the town. Cause generally, you know, we could get a Thursday or a Friday night, original show booked somewhere.
That's smart.
But you know, Saturday was the money maker. We'd play the cover show and make our money, and that would cover the weekend's expenses.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how we tried. Perfect. You know, and we'll still use that business model sometimes, but The Issue doesn't really play cover shows anymore. So it's just original sets. And if we want to play a cover show, we do the out of line thing.
Okay. So, but that is like how you would get, if you're going to do a show far away, you kind of have to do a few cover shows along the way to pay the bill for that, right?
Yeah, because you know, at this stage of the game, you can't really, for an original set,
it's hard,
man, where we're at, you can't get a guarantee on the night. And if you do, it's maybe like $50 and a bar tab, which you know, works out, but it doesn't really pay for the gas and hotel and stuff. So we've used that business model just to make it possible for us to get out of town and play original shows.
Sure.
Not lose money.
Absolutely. No, that's smart. Yeah. You just gotta get out there and do these kinds of tours. So what is your goal with the band long-term? Like, how many followers do you want to get? How many listeners like on Spotify? Like, what is there tours you want to get on or shows or festivals you want to do? Or,
oh yeah. I mean, you know, we are all, we're all in the mind frame. We want to take this thing as far as we can, you know, as far as we're allowed to. So, you know, we're chasing it right now. You know, we're trying to do the right things, that we can right now to stay on top of our game. And, you know, even during, the pandemic and stuff, you know, we're thinking of ways, you know, how can we be prepared to hit the ground running as soon as we're able to go, you know, and we have, you know, we have some good people, you know, in the local area here that have done the thing and they're supportive of us and, you know, doing what they can to help us get off the ground. And, you know, from Minneapolis, it's take over the Midwest, and from Midwest, it's go from there. So that's just what we, you know, short term is Minneapolis, long term is touring the country, you know.
Okay. I mean,
long term touring the world.
There you go. Nice. Do you guys have a manager then right now, or?
No, we don't. You know, it's all do it yourself, DIY in the independent world. I do a lot of the booking and kind of management behind the scenes stuff. You know, the guys help me with stuff as much as they can, but you know, it's just book shows and go and play them. It's, you know, and try and meet, you know, people in all these places and,
that's
and
smart network. Yeah.
Grow our repertoire from there.
Especially other musicians. Cause then you guys, like I said, if you did want to tour or do like some sort of, you know, team up, or especially if another band makes it really big, then you could open for them or something. There's a lot of that kind of stuff going on. So let's talk about the songs that you have out so far. So like, I think the biggest one is Open Your Eyes. That's the one I said, something kind of like Pierce the Veil, but you have a new song called What You Need, which sounds very different than the Open Your Eyes, which I think I like this one a little bit better. It's a little bit not as aggressive, but it's still a hard rock song. It's really good.
For sure.
You tell me about it though. I don't know. What do you think it sounds like? It sounds good.
You know, that one I feel like maybe sits more in the 90s influence range of things. 90s, early 2000s. Soundgarden is also a big influence of ours, and that song kind of has that vibe. But I don't know how familiar you are with Alter Bridge, the band.
Yeah,
Alter Bridge.
That's Slash is a singer, Miles Kennedy. Yeah. He's from like Spokane, Washington, I believe.
Yeah,
actually.
He's a Washington native.
Yeah.
That band is a big influence out of for all of us. That's kind of a common ground for the members in the band is the band Alter Bridge. So we take a lot of influence from those guys, you know, catchy hard rock riffs, you know, that get stuck in your head.
Yes.
It's not too poppy, but it's, you know, in your face, rock and roll.
Yeah.
So that's more what this tune is like, you know. Open Your Eyes was kind of this little metal tangent that we had and wanted to do. And nowadays with Spotify and the way record sales are, you don't really sell records anymore. So you can kind of do whatever you want in a sense, you know? So obviously we kind of have to try and, as we're getting off the ground, figure out what our sound is, but at the same time being diverse with our sound and putting out tunes that are maybe not exactly or along the same lines helps diversify our audience right off the bat.
Right. No, that's smart. Do you have more songs? I'm assuming you have more songs coming out to make kind of a full album, or I guess people don't really do albums anymore. It's all just about singles. So you're going to have more singles, or what is the plan with releasing new music?
Yeah. So, just for personal gratification as a band, we're going to put an album out because, you know, we all grew up listening to records, and we just want to have that thing, you know, that says, you know, it's an album, there's 10 songs on a CD. So we're going to do that. But we're going to, you know, right now our plan, just to kind of keep building our Spotify numbers and followers and stuff, is just single every few months, every couple months, keep putting out some new tunes, build that repertoire up, and then, you know, take those singles and whatever other back catalog of tunes we have and put out an album in like a year from now. All just doing, you know, all this drip content in between where you're putting out songs and you just build it up to this thing. And
okay. Yeah. Cause I noticed that, I thought I saw something that you posted. It was, one of your songs was getting played on the radio, a bunch of radio stations.
Yeah. Our song Moving On off of our second EP, the self-titled song for that EP. We did a radio, promotions campaign, and, it got played on the last time I got any information on it, which was over a year ago, it had over 110 radio stations that added it to their rotation.
That's great.
So that was kind of, that was when our numbers kind of started jumping up, even on Facebook and Spotify and stuff. Cause you can go in and see like all the analytics. It'll show you like how many times your song has been Shazammed and like where in the country.
Wait, how do you see if you, how, where your show, where your song is Shazammed? Is that through the Shazam app?
So it's actually through the, Apple Music Artist app. Oh. So I don't know if Shazam is like part of Apple Music.
It must
or
be.
What.
Yeah. That's interesting. But,
yeah, it's so, I mean, it's very helpful.
Yeah. When we're, and does it show you like where it was Shazammed?
Yeah, it'll show you like where in the country, where in the world, you know, it was Shazammed. So,
I'm assuming like, mostly in Minnesota, or is there other hot spots that you noticed that were out of Minnesota?
Yeah, so like Texas, Chicago is another big city for us that plays our music. Dallas, for whatever reason. Washington, surprisingly, as well.
And I saw that because there was a couple stations that they played. It was like these like kind of small towns like Kennewick and Tri-Cities. Yep. And so I was like, oh, that's cool that they played them in these like kind of smaller towns.
Yeah. So it was all college radio.
Oh, okay. Played on. That makes sense.
Because you got to be, in order to get on a major station, you have to be a major label artist with, you know, that influence, radio influence behind you. So when, you know, when we did our campaign, it was all college radio and independent radio stations that picked us up. But, you know, radio play is radio play, you know, we'll take any exposure.
Well, and I think the big thing now is the Spotify playlists. If you can get hooked up with those, and I don't know how to do that, but I see a lot of people, a lot of bands that I've interviewed or I follow or whatever, I see like, oh, we just got added to this playlist. So I don't know if you submit it and then they decide if they want to do it. And, but it's kind of maybe a cross promotional thing because, you know, they're sharing your song, but then you're sharing their playlist. So maybe that's how, you know, you kind of scratch each other's backs, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in a lot of ways, Spotify is pretty much just replacing what radio was.
For sure. You know? Yeah.
Instead of getting added to a radio station, you're getting added to a Spotify playlist. Mm-hmm. And now that's the goal.
Absolutely.
So yeah, you know, there's like Spotify campaigns and stuff that companies do. You got to be kind of careful who you're working with. We work with a company that helps like release our music, and do like press campaigns and stuff
perfect.
Like that.
Okay.
So they do like a Spotify, pitch campaign where basically they have this catalog of Spotify playlist curators that work regularly with them. So when we release a song, they send it to their list of Spotify playlist curators. And then, you know, it's up to the playlist at that point, whether they add our song. So it's really the same as as radio.
Yeah.
It's, you know, when we put a song out, they send the song to radio and the radio station decide whether.
But I think, I think the Spotify playlist is even becoming more common. I mean, I just don't know that definitely. Many people that listen to terrestrial radio anymore. I feel like it's all Spotify. I mean, I listen to satellite radio, but I might be in the minority there. I don't know if a lot of people even listen to Sirius. So,
yeah, I mean, occasionally, like, I'll hop in my car and drive and like not even be paying attention and have the radio on. And then I'll be like, oh, I don't want to listen to the radio. And I'll hook my phone up and, you know, pull up Spotify, you know, and that's just the newer generation. That's how things work.
Well, that and the live shows. So, yeah, the more live shows you can do and more exposure you can get that way. So, yeah, if you ever come to Phoenix, let me know. I'll come and check you guys out. Or you could go to one of the smaller towns outside of Phoenix. There, you know, there's live music. Oh, what was the one town I was just in? Now I'm drawing a blank. But another band I interviewed, they're going to be doing a show out that way. So if, you know, you go a couple hours outside of Phoenix, there might be more market there. So
Our plan next winter, when it's 40 below in Minnesota, is to go to the southern states and play some music instead.
Yeah. Cause we have concerts here. I mean, we have outdoor music all the time. I mean, it's still, I think it's safe too. I don't know. I mean, it's happening. So I assume that somebody allowed it. So I think it's safe that during the pandemic, you know, people socially distance.
Yeah, I would think outside's got to be all right as long as it's set up, you know.
Yeah. Keep your distance from people. Don't cough on anyone. Should be fine. Right. So, look into that. So, cool. Sure. Well, I think that's all I have for you. I don't, unless there's something else you want to promote. It sounds like we have new music on the way, and we'll definitely keep an eye out on you guys. March 1st. Okay, cool.
March 1st, What You Need, and we're going to be putting out a music video.
Oh.
Cool. The song. So we're gonna have a full-blown music video dropping on March 1st as well.
Okay.
So yeah.
All right. We'll look for
YouTube
that.
YouTube and Spotify.
Awesome. Very cool. So, and then I do like to end with a charity, as you know. Is there one that you work with, or one you want to give a shout out to?
Yeah, actually, I do. Here, I just gotta pull it up. I have it in my notes in my phone. So I had an uncle pass away of ALS like 10 years ago. And you know, people don't really know much about ALS. I certainly didn't. So the Pete Freights ALS Foundation is the charity I want to promote.
Okay.
It's actually the, you know, that ice bucket challenge that was going on however many years ago.
Yeah.
He was kind of the guy that started that whole thing and he passed away from ALS.
Okay. What is it called again?
Baseball player. The Pete Freights.
Okay.
Freights.
I will put that in
Memorial.
The notes. Yeah, that's a tough one to see. Any of those neurological things are just so debilitating and hard to see people go through that. It's really painful to watch. And I'm obviously for the person going through it, it's just hell. So if there's some way we can help find a cure for that, it'd be amazing.
Yeah, for sure. It's just a slow, long drug out process. So,
yeah. Hate that. You know. So, all right. Well, thank you. And we'll definitely look forward to new music from The Issue.
All right, for sure. Thanks,
okay.
Chuck.
All right.
I appreciate
Thanks, Clay. It was fun.
Have a good one.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So that was Clay Dieters of The Issue, and we're just going to go ahead and dive right into the next interview, and this is Jim and Jack Ivins of The Ivins. So enjoy this one. Welcome, Jim and Jack Ivins of The Ivins. How are you guys doing?
Great, man. Thank you so much for having us. We're excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks for reaching out. It was really cool. So you knew Bo Lastovich of The True Villains. That's why I wore this shirt, because that was kind of like how you found me, right?
Yeah, man. I saw that Bo did the show, and I saw who else you had interviewed before. I was like, all right, this guy seems like he really gets, you know, what we're trying to do. And obviously, Bo's a fantastic guy. We love him. We love The True Villains guys. We've done a bunch of shows with them.
Oh, really? And, okay, that's cool.
Just thought we would gel.
Yeah, no, I think it'll be fun. So, and then you had a good way to hook me to get on the show. You're like, you know, I never pull this card, but I do know Russell Wilson. I grew up with Russell Wilson. So please tell, you grew up in Virginia, Richmond, Virginia, and like, what, he was like your neighbor down the, tell me how are you friends with him? Like, can you get him on my podcast or what?
All right, so we will preface this right away. No.
Okay.
I will say this though. We went to a K-12 school in Richmond, Virginia. Russell is in my grade. And so we grew up together. And then when we got to high school and it became obvious to everyone that this 14-year-old was like this all-star quarterback, of course, he becomes, you know, varsity quarterback like right away. And that's when Jack was playing varsity football and they played football together.
Okay, that's weird. So did you play against him? Did you try to tackle Russell Wilson? Because that sounds like a hellish job.
So, well, I was a senior when he was a sophomore. But we had a really small, I think there were like 28 guys on our football team. I mean, oh, we were really, really good. We were like we won the state. So we were,
dang,
like everybody played both ways.
So okay.
Like most guys, if you went on the field, you didn't come off the field.
Jeez. So did Russell Wilson play defense in high school then?
He was a DB.
I didn't know that.
Like a part of history that gets lost.
That's crazy.
Yeah, he was a DB, and then like he was he was, became this the first couple games of the season he wasn't the starter.
Okay.
Sophomore, an older guy was, but then after the second game, it was pretty clear that.
Was he taller? Had he peaked his height at that point, or was he shorter? Yeah. He's always been short, huh?
I haven't seen Russell. I saw Russell 10 years ago.
I'm about the same.
Yeah.
The last time I like interacted with him, I was actually at a Skins game a few years ago in DC, and like my dad and I ran into his mom, and like we were chatting, and she's like, "Let me get him," and I was like, "Please do not do that." He's in the middle of warmups. Let me go call him. I was like, "Mrs. Wilson, for the love of God,
no, don't interrupt it." Yeah. Well, that's cool. So then, anyways, you guys had this band, the Ivans, and you guys had opened up for the Ataris, and you know, you were getting some success in Virginia, but then you thought we need to make the jump and you moved to New York. Cause I think, Jim, I don't know if you were as well, Jack, but Jim, you were kind of a fan of like CBGBs and like the punk scene there. And so you thought that's the place to go, New York City.
Yeah. You know, I had a fascination with New York my whole life. And I was like this close to going there for college. I chickened out, and my friend who, you know, we had talked about in high school, like we're going to go to college together. And he actually went, I chickened out. So I'd go visit him every year. And every time I'd be like, why didn't I do this? Like, this is so awesome. And then, you know, being a fan of, you know, the CBGB scene of, you know, the 70s and the 80s, and then the Strokes and the AAS, you know, that whole scene that happened in the early 2000s, I was like, let's give it a shot. You know, I'll move up to New York and, you know, let's see if we can do it. And unfortunately, what I very quickly realized was that scene that birthed, you know, the Strokes and TV on the Radio and Yeah, and all those bands was like, that was kind of like the last gasp of like New York being able to like produce artists. Because it's so completely unrealistic to live there and be in the arts.
Because it's so expensive, right?
The reason that all working actors are waiters, because like, it's just, you can't, it's impossible to live there. Like,
because of the cost though, right? Is that the main?
For cost. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's so expensive that, I mean, to afford to live anywhere. I mean, you know, I lived there for 2 years and I did it the way I always wanted to. You know, I lived in Manhattan for 2 years, which, you know, I did to myself.
Wow.
But the problem was I had no money all the time because it's so ridiculously expensive to live there. And to do it, you know, realistically, you got to live like way in the outer boroughs and have like five roommates and, you know.
So you did, you lived in the central part of it in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. Did you, what did you do to pay the rent? And did you have five roommates?
I didn't. No, I lived in a studio my first year. I had a roommate my second year. I booked conference rooms for investment bankers at Barclays.
Oh, okay.
Which is funny, when you tell people you work at Barclays, everyone thinks you're like a rich investment banker. And I'm like, no, my job has nothing to do with money.
But they had money, so they could they pay you pretty well? Or
so I worked for a staffing company that was subcontracted.
Oh, okay.
So even though I worked for Barclays, did all of their corporate training, like had to adhere to all their company policies, dress code, like all that stuff, they didn't sign my paychecks.
Okay. But so then you're doing the band there, and I'm assuming you're doing shows like on the weekends. Or are you able to get in some of the? I mean, CBGB's was gone. I know I went to New York, and the CBGB's.
At that point.
Yeah. So is there, what kind of clubs there? Are you able to get in some of those clubs and get some live shows going?
Oh yeah, I mean right away. Our first show in New York was opening for Rooney at Webster Hall, which I just like talked us into, like, which is just, I didn't think I'd be able to just do that.
Yeah,
but I did. And so, you know, Jack was living in DC, so he took a bus. And in fact, the rest of the band at the time, I was still had the Virginia version of our band. And I was naive enough to think that I'll just keep the same band. Like, this is totally practical. You know, they'll just come to New York all the time when I play shows. That didn't last long. But yeah, I mean, everyone got in a car and drove up and they stayed in my studio apartment.
Wow.
And played Webster Hall a bunch. We did Bowery Electric, we did Fontana's, pianos,
like Sullivan Music Hall,
or yeah, Sullivan Hall, which no longer exists. Bitter End.
Okay, so lots of shows. And so then tell me about this record label guy who he'd worked at Sony for like 30 years and he's like, I'm gonna be a band manager. And but then he told you to move back to Virginia so that could be part of your story. Like, you're the band from Richmond, Virginia.
Homework, man. Holy shit. Yeah. Okay. So I'd been in New York for 2 years. This guy's name is Michael Kaplan, who you're referring to. Before we met Michael, we got featured on this blog called Kings of A&R, because this was, 2013, 2014. This is when blogs were still like a big deal. Like, I feel like they're not really a thing anymore. But like at the time, if you could get a bunch of blog features, that ups your Google search results and, people start, thinking about you. We got featured on this blog called Kings of A&R, and this guy who is this lawyer out of Mississippi, his name is Marty Frascona, he found us, said he really loved our band, wanted to work with us. He was a very indie friendly guy, but he had one client that was blowing up and it was 21 Pilots.
Mm.
So we're like, all right, 21 Pilots lawyer wants to rep us. That's pretty cool. So we start working on this new album and we cut four songs, and a childhood friend of our dad's name is Sam Taylor. He done King's X. And what else did Sam do, Jack?
Sam originally worked with in the ZZ Top camp, but then he became the producer and manager of, he did King's X. He did Galactic Cowboys and Atomic Opera. And then he ended up going to the CCM world. He did like Third Day. And
right. That's it. So Sam Taylor is the childhood friend of our dad's. And he is like, hey, can you get Jim to send me those songs that the guys cut in New York? I'm going to give them to a friend of mine. So he sends him to this friend, and he winds up being Michael Kaplan. My dad relays this to me. He's like, hey, it's this guy named Michael Kaplan. Do you know who this is? I'm like, Michael Kaplan signed Firehouse, who is our cousin.
Right, Bill Leverty, who I've had on the show, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So completely serendipitous connection.
Interesting.
Has nothing to do with Bill.
Yeah.
And it's just Michael Kaplan heard our tunes. And he decided that he was wanting to throw his hat into the ring as a manager. He'd never done it before. He'd been on the label side forever. He was managing one other guy. I was this kid out of San Francisco. But he was like, I want you guys to be like a pilot project for me. And we'll, I love your music. I think I can get you a record deal. And I think you could be the biggest band in the world. So when you hear that, that's a pretty weird conversation to have.
And the thing about Michael, too, was that for the last several years, he kind of, his thing was signing unorthodox bands.
Yeah.
Okay. So and bands so that sound different
really,
or.
Yeah. We didn't really fit neatly into a mold.
Okay.
Still kind of a problem.
Still something.
Yeah. I noticed this, your music, and we'll get to that, but yeah, your music, I mean, you have a variety of stuff, but so who was the record person? Was it a record label person or somebody had told you that your social media wasn't up to par? You didn't have enough Twitter followers. And that's an interesting conversation because there's this new documentary on Netflix called Fake Famous. It's really interesting. And it shows how big a part of the social media stuff, this like the bots and people buying these bots and things like that.
Yeah.
And, I find myself spending a lot of time on social media trying to, like people's stuff to get them to come on my profile. And, I even do a few promotions. Like, how much of a part of the social media is that for bands nowadays? Because I know it's huge for the podcast. I mean, it seems like for everything. If you want to do anything like artistic.
So we got a crash course in, the new music business when we were working with Marty. Before we met Michael, Marty had a lot of, kind of a slow burn long game, ideas for us. You know, he wanted us to, get into sponsorships. Like, we were trying to get in the foot in the door with Red Bull. So he had a lot of these ideas kind of in place. And then we did those four songs and he heard them and he was like, okay, fuck this. Also, sorry, I can curse here. Can't
yeah.
I?
Fucking cuss. Okay. I don't give a shit.
Right. So he was like, okay, forget about these plans. Like, you guys need a record deal like immediately. So I'm going to shop you. And the way these conversations tended to go was he'd talk to somebody. They'd be like, oh, I love this. Let's talk in 2 weeks. And then he'd talk to them in 2 weeks, be like, all right, moving forward with the Ivins deal, right? And they're like, oh, Marty, there's no way we can actually sign this band. And he's like, well, what are you talking about? 2 weeks ago, you said you love the music. And they're like, they don't have enough Twitter followers. What the hell are we supposed to do with them? And that was kind of the story for everywhere we went.
Okay. So
that was our crash course for... oh, the old music business does not exist anymore.
Oh, okay. Well, so then how did you get these? Because you've had some songs in the media. You had a song on MTV's Real World Portland, the Oxygen show, Best Inc., and a Fox Sports thing. And how did you get your music featured on those TV shows? Because that does seem to be one of the best ways to make money in music nowadays. Because obviously you can't sell actual CDs and the streaming's like a small part of it. And by the way, I think it is so brilliant how you put those clips of those songs on your website so people can see. Well, when you just say like, oh, we're on this show and that show, it's like people go, okay, what? But like, you have actually the clips on your website. So how did you get? Yeah, that's really smart though. How did you get them involved in the first place though?
So there are companies out there that if you look in the right places, they have relationships with music supervisors. A lot of times they don't end up, these deals you sign don't end up doing anything, those are three placements you just mentioned.
Yeah.
Sport, Best Inc. and Real World. We probably signed about 15 different licensing agreements, and just those are the ones that took.
Okay. So when you sign a licensing agreement, is it, you don't pay something up front or anything, right? It's just like, they're going to say, we're going to take this percentage of this or.
A lot of times what'll happen is, unless you find a really nice guy, which I have at other licensing placements in the past, but sometimes what'll happen, either the person who facilitated the relationship will take a percentage of a sync fee, because obviously they can't touch your royalties unless you sign a really shitty contract. But sometimes they'll take a percentage of the sync fee that you get. And then when there is no sync fee, which is in reality programming, there are no sync fees. That's typically why reality shows use independent bands, because they can get them for free and they can use the exposure card.
Oh.
So they'll say, well, hey, we can't pay up front, but you get your song in an episode of The Real World.
You don't get paid for that.
You get paid like fractions of pennies.
You get paid on your royalties.
Okay.
On the royalty side, but like the payout is like garbage.
Really? That sucks.
The contrast is like my roommate in undergrad. He's a New York musician named Reed Cackley, and Reed does like electronic music. And I remember it was like a few years after we got out of college, we'd just gotten like, I think it was the first Real World one or something. There were a few of them. And we ended up getting like, I think it was like $200 or something.
I think at the beginning, I think we made like $1,000, but like everything after that was like, after $1,000, then you make like $100. Then after that,
right. Because nobody's watching an old episode of the MTV. I get it. But that's still a good experience. And so this is an interesting one too. You did.
Although, just not to cut you off.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I know the point Jack was about to make.
Oh, sorry.
The point I was going to make was that I remember Reed got a show placed on like CSI New York.
Okay.
Like, they go, hey, you can either get royalties on this or we can just pay you like $12,000 up front. And he was like, why don't you give me the $12,000? And
the same really?
Thing on a commercial. It was some company in Australia found him. They used one of his songs on a water bottle commercial. They paid him. It was like, we can either pay you $35,000 or you can roll the dice and see how long like we use. Because if the commercial was to be used for like 8 years, you probably in the long term would end up getting like way more money, but they were like, we can either give you this money now or you can like see how long we use this campaign.
So this is like a math. This sounds like a math problem, like something in the SATs that I would fail.
It's all math problems.
It's kind of really nice. So like, they could end up using your song for like years, and then they would owe you for all that time, or they can just pay you some money up front. That's probably not a huge amount to them.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, but so anyways, there was another song you wrote. This is interesting. You wrote a song for Riley Rowe, Still, and it ended up on this MTV show called Big Tips Texas. And so in this show, what's that?
I said, you really did your homework.
Oh, because this is so fascinating. So they're playing this, your song, and I'm distracted by what's happening in the show. They're doing this shot called the Minnow Bomb, which is, I've never heard of this. It's where you can do any shot you want, but they literally put a live minnow in the shot and you shoot it. You don't chew it. You shoot the shot and you swallow a minnow. This is disgusting and crazy and wild. Have you heard of this before? And did you know?
Okay. So I'm going to tell you the story behind all of this. Okay. So
I invented the minnow shot.
Yes. So I bought that bar. No. So I have a friend named Pedro Ada. He's a producer in Richmond. I've been making music with him, whether by myself or with this band, for now like 12 years. He works with a lot of people. He went to this wedding in like Ohio or something, heard this girl sing, and he walked up to her afterwards, was like, "Hey, I run the studio in Virginia. I don't know if you're like a performer or whatever, but like if you have any songs, but like I'd love to record you one day." And she's like, "Well, I write lyrics. I don't write any songs. I can't play an instrument. Like, I don't write melodies or anything. I just have words in like a diary. Like, can you do something with that?" So Pedro texts me and he's like, "You ever written a country song before?" And mind you, this is years before we moved to Nashville.
Yeah.
And I was like, no. He's like, "Want to try?" I was like, "Okay, sure." So I got two Word documents of words and I turned them into songs. And then online, as I used to do all the time, there was a website called Music X-Ray. It was one of these services. I mean, it's highway robbery. I can't believe how much money I spent on these websites. But like, you pay 10, 15 bucks to submit for the opportunity for someone to maybe get your song a direct placement on a TV show.
Okay.
Over years, I probably spent thousands of dollars on this. Like, it's ridiculous how much I spent. But I found a guy who had this relationship with MTV. And he was looking for, modern country pop songs. And I had this song called Still that I'd written for Riley. She had recorded it with Pedro. And I gave it to him. And sure enough, he was like, "All right, this new MTV reality show wants to use it. It's called Big Tips Texas." And I was like, "What the hell is that?" And he's like, "It's essentially if, MTV had a huge hit with Jersey Shore. Now they decided they wanted to take Jersey Shore and put it at a bar in Texas on the Gulf." I hear that my song's going to get used, and we're watching the show, and it's all like, the show is awful. It only lasted one season.
But okay.
Like,
yeah. Never heard of it before, but
our dad and like his then little stepkids are like all watching the show, and all these girls are talking about like blowjobs and like all this like really like dirty shit. My dad's texting me like, "What the hell are you having me watch right now? Like, this show is awful." And I'm like, "I don't know, man." And then all of a sudden they're like, "Minnow shot," and then there comes the song.
So you knew which part
for like 2 minutes.
Yeah, you knew which part it would be in. Like,
no,
so you,
I had no idea.
Oh, did but you knew
all they tell you is that it's happening on that episode.
Okay,
which honestly was even funny because most of the time they don't even tell you. You just have to find out on your ASCAP statement.
Oh, yeah, because I was going to say, what if they took your song and they're like, "All right, we're putting it like in a boner pill commercial or like herpes medication." Like, you would have no say in that. They could do that.
That is correct.
That is exactly
that is
correct.
So freaking weird.
I signed the contract. They can do whatever they want with it. In fact, that was what our dad is a lawyer. Yeah. Sorry, Jack. Yeah.
You got it.
I was saying, so our dad is a lawyer, and he always used to be so nervous when like we'd sign these licenses.
Yeah.
Well, what if like a Depends commercial wants to use it?
Yeah, something totally embarrassing. Or what if it's like a political thing that's like the opposite of what you believe, and then people are like, "You're a white supremacist." Or I mean, they could do all sorts of crazy stuff with that.
That would suck. But at the time, I'm a broke musician.
Yeah.
So I'm like, if they want to pay me some money to use my song, guess what? I'm going to let them do it. Probably.
Oh, that's funny. So another thing you did, you starred in the Billy Currington music video, which I didn't know who this guy was, but apparently he's this huge country music star. He's got this video has like 13 million views. It's an interesting premise. It's just a bunch of Polaroid pictures with you and some girl. Do you get like recognized for that? I mean, 13 million views is a lot.
So I got into that. That was the first thing I did when I moved to Nashville, which is funny. So first of all, you said, I don't know who Billy Currington is. I don't know who Billy Currington is.
Yeah. I like the song, actually. It's a good song, though.
I actually very much enjoy the song, even though I am not a country music guy at all. I don't pretend to know anything about it. I moved here, and there was a girl that I knew from New York. She was actually the first person to ever write about our band. She wrote about us on her blog. She ended up working for CBS and a couple of the major outlets. And she introduced me to a friend of hers when I moved here, because I moved here not knowing anybody. Jack Day actually didn't move here until that 6 months after me. And so I didn't know almost anybody here. She introduced me to this girl who's a videographer. Girl comes into the bar I'm working at like a week later and is like, hey, I'm shooting this video. Universal's got a really quick turnaround. They need me to shoot this video this weekend. Can you be the guy in this couple for this Billy Currington video? Just like, kind of keep it on the low. I'm like, great. Who the hell is Billy Currington? And she's like, you're kidding, right? And I'm like, no, I'm not. This is, welcome to me. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
So it was me and this girl. She worked for some company called Rated Red, which apparently is like Complex for frat bros. That's how it was described to me. So me and this girl from Rated Red became this couple where you're in this Billy Currington video. And then, yeah, it has like 13 million views. And now anytime anybody I know hears that song, I get a text.
That's funny. That's cool, though. That was a cool video. It's a good song. Good exposure, yeah, for you.
I really enjoyed doing it. It was just like 5 hours gallivanting around Nashville taking Polaroids.
Was that a flat rate or was that a royalty fee?
I think I did that as a favor. I think Katie felt bad. She paid me like $200 or something like that. But like, I told her, I was like, you seem like a nice girl. Like I'll be in this video.
Okay. Well, it's a good resume builder. I know you guys have, the Ivans mostly do originals, but you did do a cover of, what's her name? Halsey Graveyard. Oh. Really cool version of that song. And I know you guys do some other like cover bands or projects. Like, is that a more lucrative thing for live shows to play in the cover bands or tribute bands as opposed to doing the originals?
Jack, I'll let you take that one.
I do that a lot more.
Do you?
So I used to play on Broadway a lot in the before times before COVID. Have you been to Nashville?
Yeah, I went for the NFL draft a couple of years ago and it was amazing.
I was playing downtown the whole time that was going on. That was nuts.
Yeah, it was. And I kept asking, I was like, is it always like this or is this just for the draft? And everyone's like, no, it's always like this. I'm like, really?
Well, I think that was an extra.
That was an extra
150,000 people there for the draft.
Okay.
But I mean, it is typically like when the weather's nice and there's not a pandemic, it is bedlam down on Broadway. And there was a time where I was down there probably 5 days a week playing. The whole cover band versus original music, it just depends on how you scale that. Cause you know, a band like Steel Panther is like ultimately, I mean,
they love them,
but they're a cover band forever.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the more lucrative cover bands ever. My buddy, Chris Vox, he sings for a band called Hairball.
Mm-hmm. I think I've heard of that one. Yeah.
Airball, they're nationally touring cover band. They basically have three musicians and three singers, and the singers just cycle on every song.
Oh, okay.
Is like, he'll come out, he's got a shaved head like Rob Halford, and then he'll leave for two songs, come back out. He's dressed like Dee Snider.
Oh, okay.
Come back out. They do this kind of shit.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys make a good living, and they play to like 3,000 people a night.
Wow. That's not bad.
So it just depends. I mean, Nashville is not really. There are cities that are set up where like you can make money playing originals. Nashville is not one of those cities.
Hey, that is not where we live. No.
This city is set up for, I mean, if you want to like make money staying in town as a musician, I mean, there's guys that this is not typical, but like the top guys down on Broadway make like $100,000 a year.
Wow. Doing covers.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's really
Broadway's 24/7 pretty much.
Broadway is. Yeah. I mean, when everything's open, live music starts at 11 a.m. and it ends at 2:30 a.m.
Yeah. And it's just so competitive. Like Jim, you had an interesting story. Like you're living in Nashville and you know, you're a singer and you're a karaoke fan. This is fun. Cause I love karaoke too, but you said that, you know, you like doing karaoke, but then you're like, you go in a Nashville bar and try to do karaoke there. It's like, there's so much talent there and so many professional singers that you hear these other people and you're like, you know what? I don't want to follow them because it's some of the best singers in the world, I would think.
I know a lot of touring musicians that would say that the only town that they would get nervous in is Nashville because, like, you know, the guy, you know, valeting your car is probably better as an instrument than you are. Like, it's just like
crazy.
Everybody here can play.
Yeah.
I mean, there's also a lot of people here that suck, but that's the point. Everybody is a great musician. There's plenty of like mediocrity, but they're like the amount of
quotient is, you know, higher.
But so in a positive way, that's good for networking, right? Because you guys collaborated with some like these Grammy nominees and these Grammy winners and producer Bo Hill. I knew that name because that guy's like, he produced Warrant and some other good big people. Right, and obviously, what's that?
And Rat out of the Cellar.
Yeah. So like, is that just come from being in Nashville? Like, it's just easy to network and meet up with these big time producers and such, and songwriters. So
that's why you live in, me at least, and Jeff, that's why you live in Nashville.
Yeah.
It's not because you think that like necessarily your band is going to cultivate a huge local following. Cause it's not, it might, if it's country, but it's not going to in other, you know, the pop genre is also pretty budding here.
Mm-hmm.
There is a rock scene, but it's not like a huge rock scene. But like the networking here, there's no place like it on
Twitter. Yeah.
And so the amount of like high level talent is so concentrated here, it's insane.
Right.
So, you know, we'll do, Jim and I put on an event called Grunge Night. And we kind of copy. There have been a couple events. There's a guy here named Tom Hurst who plays drums for Tracy Lawrence, but he played for the Backstreet Boys and like a bunch of like A-list artists. I think he played for Better Than Ezra at one point, but
wow.
Tom put this show together called Loud Jams years ago and it's still around. And it was like once a month and he would just get a bunch of musicians from like really great acts and he would just assign songs. So he'd be like, there's a similar event in LA. What's it called? It's like Lucky Strike Night.
Oh yeah. I know. I've Hollywood Jam it's at the Lucky
there's
Strike.
A couple of them.
Yeah. Open jam kind of thing. Yeah.
So you get, you know, you'll get guys from like all these sick bands and they're just getting up and they're just playing, you know, you learn your shit before you get there because no one wants to look stupid in front of the best musicians in the world.
Right.
So, and then that existed first. And then our buddy Tyson Leslie, he plays with a lot of guys, but he plays in Vixen. He's the one fella in Vixen. He plays.
Oh, I didn't know they had a male in that band. Yeah. It's like a female hair metal band. Yeah.
I mean, from a distance, you might think he was a chick. He's got black hair that's about this long.
Well, that was a lot harder to tell in the 80s of some of those bands.
But so Tyson put it together. It's called Rare Hair. And Rare Hair is like the event. All the music is like 80s.
Yeah. Didn't you do a Tool tribute? Tell me this story, Jim. You did like a Tool tribute show and you were banging your head so much.
Everything.
That you got the spins and you fell over and people thought you were like drunk, but it was just because you were like going like this so much.
So there's another guy in town named Brandon Bruce who is putting on these tribute nights.
Also, he plays bass in a thrash band called Havoc.
Yeah. Okay. So he put on this Tool night and this was the first one of these tribute nights that we'd actually gotten into. So we played this song called Sweat. The club is sold out. It's like 600 people in this club called the Basement East that's become like our home. And you know, I'm a little nervous, but you know, the same, just cause you know, again, when you do these tribute nights, you know, people actually care about these songs. Like if you're doing an original show and you fuck up your song, like unless you like royally shit the bed, like no one's really going to care that much. If you fuck up a Tool song at a Tool tribute night, like people might care about that.
Right.
So, you know, I'm a little nervous cause like Tool's not my normal thing. You know, I always want to try new things and broaden my horizons, but so I get kind of amped up and I'm like, it's very dark in there, but you know, Maynard, you know, a lot of times wears sunglasses and he's shirtless and everything. So I decided I'm going to do that too. And I just start, you know, twirling my head and going nuts. Well then, because they've also got like kind of strobe stuff going, well, I get the spins and I fall over. And like, now granted, I don't miss my cue, but I fall over and almost fall right into all the amps. But I miss just barely, and I get up, I start singing, and then it happens again. I get up,
Then it happens a third time. My bandmates are like, what the hell are you doing, Jim? And like, I'm mortified right now. I'm just like, again, I have not missed a cue yet, but it keeps happening. I get off stage and I am just like defeated. I left the venue like immediately. I was just like, oh my God, I just embarrassed us so much on the show. Well, like 2 months later, we're playing a gig and this bartender hands me my drink and is like, do I know you? And I was like, no, I don't think we've ever met. She's like, were you at a Tool tribute show like 2 months ago on stage? I was like, I might have been. She's like, you're the guy that was on drugs and falling over.
Yeah, so they thought you're on drugs, but you...
I was like, no, I wasn't on drugs. I'm just an idiot. So yeah, that actually happened several times.
That's funny.
People with that exact story, like, wait a minute, you're the guy that was falling on the stage all the time.
Hey, well, yeah, the recognition, that's all that matters.
Well, those shows are same deal as the previous ones. I mean, those, the way they're set up is like the same way that we set up our grunge night. It's like, you know, that we happen to be playing as a band, but a lot of them were like, okay, we're going to have the drummer from Florida Georgia Line, and we're going to have the bass player from Exodus, and we're going to have the singer from some whatever band.
Sounds
and,
fun. You know. Yeah.
So you get to, you get to work with all these musicians from different genres, and it's awesome for networking and just, you know, and then that a lot of times that leads to like picking up gigs down the road. I know a lot of guys who did really well at one of these shows, and then whoever they were playing with was like, you know what, I played with this guy at this tribute show.
Well, that's what when I had Rich Redman, you probably don't know who he is because he's a Jason Aldean's. Okay. Yeah. So he's Jason Aldean's drummer. And, you know, that's what he said. He was in Nashville. I can't remember how long it was. It was like 5, 10, 12, 15 years, something crazy like that. And he was in so many different kinds of bands, like different styles of music. And then he found Jason Aldean. He's like, I'm going to hitch my wagon to you. Like this is in, you know, that he found his person that he was going to hang on to. And that's, you know, it took a long time. So I think a lot of it is just like sticking with it. And he said that a lot of people that he had gone to Nashville with, they kind of like, they, you know, they moved home, they got jobs, they got married or whatever, and he just stuck with it. So it's like, it seems like it's a lot of networking and also sticking with it. So, but Jim, one of the things that you did that was interesting is that you said when the pandemic hit, you're going to like, all right, well, I can't go out and do shows on the weekends anymore. So I'm just going to write and record songs every weekend. Right. And you did a bunch of different songs. Mm-hmm. And so was,
yeah, so I was going to mention that just because as a result of us, you know, putting on these grunge nights, we get all these different guys together. And then eventually it gets so big that we have Chris Daughtry come sing with us. You know, you meet all these people. And so I decided to make this album called Quarantunes where I wrote all these songs. And I was like, well, now I have this giant Rolodex of people that I know, like, I wonder who wants to jam. So I would just sent demos to people and like, hey, do you want to like record this song? And yeah, I mean, as Jack mentioned, you know, Sean from Florida Georgia Line, he's a buddy, you know, he's on it. Two of the guys from Daughtry are on it. I got Greg from Three Doors Down, Ethan from Reliant K, Casey Todd, who was in Tonic, Martin from Accept, you know, Matt from CKY, like, you just get all these guys because everyone is so friendly in Nashville. Everyone just wants to play all the time. Like that's the one thing we realized when we moved here was it's like everybody just wants to play all the time. And like nobody charged me for any of that. Nobody even asked. Like everyone's just like,
wow.
I was going to get into that, you know, after they said yes, but I was like, great, I'll have it for you in 2 days.
So is that your solo thing or is that for this band that you're the Ivans?
I did it by myself just because I was writing all these different styles. But in the middle of that, a couple of ideas turned into Ivan songs. Our last two singles, Bloom and Composure, came out of songs that I was writing at the time for this then unknown project.
Okay.
You know, then a couple songs I was like, well, I think if I take this to the other guys, like I think it would be much better.
And don't you have a project with the guitarist from Daughtry, Brian Craddock? It's called Post Traumatic Sons.
Like, nobody knows that. Yeah, I do. That also happened during the pandemic. That hasn't come out. That hasn't gone anywhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, we did five songs together. It's really fun. It's really fun music, Brian. Is a huge fan of Stone Temple Pilots, and so he just wanted to write a bunch of songs that were like his love letter to Stone Temple Pilots. And he had heard our song Stockholm Syndrome, and he was like, "Hey, I really like your vocals on Stockholm Syndrome. Would you sing on this song?" And then this song turned into four other ones. And what was fun with that, the fun exercise with that was,
you know, he's writing these songs that are so much like Stone Temple Pilots. I'm like, okay, I have to try not to ape Scott Weiland. So I have to like think of like what is Weiland doing on like these comparable songs and just like make my melodies completely different because so it doesn't sound like I'm trying to rip them off. So it was a fun little exercise to do, especially because, I mean, this was like the first 2 months of quarantine.
Okay.
So I didn't have a lot to do.
Yeah,
so,
no, that's great. Sounds like you've been staying really busy. That's good. Just, you know, keeping the musical fires burning, I guess. So, then your song, I want to ask you about this, the Composure song. That's like a really catchy alternative rock song. And it was featured by, explain this to me, Red Bull Athletes. I don't understand. What is a Red Bull athlete? Is that like a Red Bull chugging competition or what is that?
No.
That would be fun though, right?
Yeah. So Red Bull sponsors a lot of athletes and it's all different sports.
Oh, okay.
A lot of extreme sports.
Okay. That makes sense. I thought it'd be cool if it was some sort of competition for Red Bull, but so would they play your songs like on like the sports channels and stuff then? Or
no, what happens is, you know, kind of, we were talking about social media earlier. It's mm-hmm. just like, you got to find ways to stand out on social media. So what I did was I had some time in quarantine. And so what I started doing was I was finding Red Bull athletes. I was going to their Instagram pages, finding videos of them doing, you know, their stuff. And I was cutting together like 15 to 30 second like highlight reels of their stunts with our song on the background. And I DM'd them and I was like, hey, I made this cool video. You know, use it if you want, like whatever. Oh. I just thought this would be cool. Like, I really dig what you do. Like, here's a little highlight reel of our song. And a couple of them were like, holy shit, this is really cool. And I'm going to put it on my Instagram.
Ah, that's smart. So how many, what was the percentage? Like, did you have to do like 2 out of 10? Like, did you have a lot that didn't message you back?
I mean, a lot of them messaged me back, but not a lot of them used it.
Okay.
But like, I think there was like 3 to 5, I think, something like that.
Did it take you a long time to do that though? Or is it pretty easy to...
I eventually got it down to where I was going pretty quick.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, it would take, you know, maybe an hour or two to cut one of those together.
Wow. You're trying all sorts of different, I like it. I like how you're kind of getting your hands into all sorts of different kinds of things to kind of make a name for yourself. It's cool. So tell me about the new single, Don't. I listened to it. It reminds me a little bit of the Cure. I don't know if that's a fair comparison. It's kind of like a poppy kind of 80s-ish sound.
Yeah. You know, Jack can probably speak to this a little more because Jack is definitely, Jack and I have a very nice push and pull where like, I want to go this way and Jack wants to go this way. And then we, you know, play this tug of war with each other. And then somewhere in the middle, you find this 2 minute and 17 second, song with, you know, the kind of drums, you know, Jack, you're big on that MGK record, right?
Yeah, there was this new Machine Gun Kelly record that like Travis Barker does all the drums on, and it was like the biggest, I don't know, was it the biggest rock record last year? I mean,
I think it's the biggest rock record of the last 5 years, frankly. Like, I've never heard this many people talk about a rock record in a long time, which I mean, I think is great. It's just funny that it's a rapper from Cleveland's record.
Yeah.
So I was like, we had this song and It like Jim said, it's like a lot of tugging, like a lot of push and pull. And I think I was trying to steer it a little bit more, I guess, into that style, which is kind of how the chorus ended up. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. I mean, our band works very interestingly because, you know, our first album, The Code Duello, was just Jack and I. And then we moved to Nashville, and Hatton Taylor, our guitar player, actually went to collegiate as well. So he, you know, we grew up together. And then Reagan Akers, our bass player, we met here. And then we actually made a record. It took 2 years to make. The day it got mastered was the announcement of the national lockdown last year. So that was just great.
Oh.
And so between that and these new singles, now it's just all four of us have very different aesthetics, and now it's just, I really enjoy, you know, kind of seeing where songs go. So Don't actually started as an idea from Ray, our bass player, and he sent me a bass line with some, you know, electronic drums on it. And then I put these kind of dissonant guitars on it in those verses, and then the choruses got bigger, and, you know, Hatton added his lead stuff,
And then what's funny was, then Jack was, like, cut this part. We got to get to the chorus quicker. Cut this part. And we actually get to the chorus in 15 seconds, which is easily the quickest I've ever gotten to a chorus in my life. But it's a really fun song. I'm really excited to release it. I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did. I've been listening to your stuff all day, and I'm listening to different. It is there's a good variety in your catalog. I like it. It kind of reminds me of the Guns N' Roses Use Your Illusions a little bit. I know some people don't like those albums, but I really like having the variety. I like Appetite too, but a lot of those songs sound very similar, kind of like AC/DC. AC/DC, they don't really have a lot of variety. It's great, but I kind of enjoy different styles of music. So it's kind of cool. Some of your songs are a little poppier, some are a little heavier. And like the song Out of Air, I don't know. You have a guitar solo on that one. That was kind of cool. I was like, is that somebody
Bill Leverty.
Okay, that's Bill. Okay, because I saw that. I heard that and I go, wow, that's like a really cool guitar solo. Okay, so that makes sense then. Yeah.
I mean, what was funny about that was, so Bill's actually all over our first album. So he recorded and mixed the song Nothing Left to Say. He mixed the song Bring Life. And
I recorded several drum songs at his studio.
Yeah, that's right. And then Jack recorded drums for Tell Me, Masquerade, Heartbreakers, and Lay Me Down at his studio. Mm-hmm. And then we had Out of Air, and I had kind of a very basic kind of melodic solo on it. But I was like, what if we just had somebody shred, who could we call? And then we're like, well, I wonder if Bill would do it. And so I text him. I'm like, hey, I got this tune. You want to give it a shot? 30 minutes later, I had a solo in my inbox.
Wow, that's fast.
We had him do one more pass on it, which took like 20 minutes. And then before you knew it, the solo that's on the record, it was there.
Great. It sounds amazing. So what is the, sorry, go on. Is there more?
No. It's just like,
that's really cool.
Wild that he would do that.
Yeah.
But now, now when you have a guitar player like Hatton Taylor in your band, the sky's the limit. So now, I'll send you the album when we're done here.
Okay.
The album that we finished, it's full of cool solos like that. So,
So what are the future plans in terms of releasing music? And then, obviously, the lockdown seems to be kind of lifting a little bit. So then do you plan to do shows either locally or tour, or what are the plans with the band for the future?
We have a bunch of singles that are completely new instead of this. We have this 12 song album that's totally done. And then while, over the past year, we ended up just writing a bunch of new singles, and Composure and Bloom were two of them. Don't was the next one. We've got like three or four more sitting in the pipeline. So our plans for now are just to release singles, as often as we can.
And okay.
Then, when the time is right, we get the right partner and everything, we've got this album, that we just didn't want to burn on 2020, 2021, just because, even objectively successful artists, I feel like I've put out records in the last year that just like came and went like right away because you couldn't really tour or promote them. And
sure.
So we don't want to, we spent 2 years making this album.
Yeah.
We don't want to just burn it.
Right. No, that makes sense. Well, cool. Well, I definitely want to catch a show if I'm in Nashville, or if you guys ever do a show near Phoenix and or in Vegas or something, I'll come and catch you guys.
Yeah.
Awesome. But I do like to end each episode with a charity. Is there one that you guys want to give a shout out to real quick here?
So when we do our grunge night, we started donating the profits of it to Second Harvest Food Bank.
Oh, great.
So so we've given to them, and I think that's who we're probably going to.
Is there
a lot of ones in town that we would end up doing after the fact?
So is that a more local for Nashville, or are they national?
That's Second Harvest Food Bank of Tennessee, but I think that organization is national.
So if people can throw a few bucks that way, and then go on your website. Like there's two websites. There's like Jim's website, and then there's the Ivan's Band website. They're both really well done. And then the Spotify page is great. Like I said, there's good variety out there. Lots of great songs. So people should definitely check that out.
Thank you. Yeah. And then Jack is also in another band that is definitely worth checking out.
Yeah. What was it called? Something. I saw that today. I just noticed that when you
were in the ballroom.
Yeah. And you had like almost 2 million streams or something on Spotify.
Yeah. The top song, I think it's almost at 2.5. Yeah. We've got several. I mean, there's a lot of them on there.
That's great.
They've got a huge international fan base.
Okay. Very cool. I'll put all this. Yeah, I'll put all those links in the notes so people can click on it and check all that stuff out.
Cool, man.
Okay, well, thanks for doing this, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you, man.
All right, keep in touch.
Will do, Jack.
Okay, see you later. Bye-bye. So there you go. Two great bands, The Issue and The Ivans. Both start with the same first letter, so easy to remember. Check out their websites and their Spotify and their social media. The websites are in the show notes, and that should have all the information that you need, along with the websites of the charities, as well as my website if you want to check out some of my other interviews. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd love for you to share it on social media or write a review of the podcast on Apple. And make sure that you subscribe or follow wherever you listen on YouTube or Spotify or Apple. That way you won't miss any future episodes. Thank you so much for listening and making it this deep into the episode. I appreciate you. I hope you have a great day. And remember, shoot for the moon.